Before we talk about the closure of the show, can you tell me about the beginnings of the show? How was this show born?
Well, back in the 20th century, yes, I will. Although, by the way, listeners who are interested in it have only been listening for 10 years in Omaha, the archive will remain of almost 1,000 hours available to one and all at studio360.org. But how did it begin? I had never done radio except being interviewed on radio, and I was, in fact, in 1999 being interviewed on radio at WNYC, public radio in New York, for a novel, my first novel that I just published. And I happened to see, as I was sitting around waiting to be, you know, interviewed, I saw this job list posting for an unnamed arts and culture show, and they were looking for a host and producers. And, oh, interesting. I didn't think anything more about it. I didn't think, well, I'm going to apply for that because, of course, I had no experience or skill. But not long after that, someone, Melinda Ward, who was in charge of content at Public Radio International, called me out of the blue and said, would you like to, you know, are you interested? Will you try out for this? Will you audition? So that's how it happened. And, you know, I did some kind of audition, and they took a giant risk, bless them, to hire me, and we created this show.
And now, as listeners know, one of the hallmarks of Studio 360 is that each episode is this, like, wonderfully strange cocktail of topics. Can you share a little bit of the process that takes place between you and the 360 team when generating ideas?
Yeah, sure. I mean, we all have different interests that are, you know, a cover for each other or complementary, and, you know, talk through stories and have a regular, you know, couple of hour weekly editorial meeting at which we thrash through things and come up with ideas. So it's there's no one way we do it. I mean, the other thing we've done over the years that I'm very proud of are all these American Icons hours and segments, really almost more than 60 of them over the years that were funded by your federal tax dollars, the National Endowment for the Humanities, bless them. Which are deep dives into particular works of art and culture, from, you know, Monticello to The Great Gatsby to the autobiography of Malcolm X to the song Dixie to the Disney theme parks, all kinds of things that we do really, you know, make real full-on documentaries about. It's all of which is a long way of saying there's no one answer to your question of how that works.
Well, and you know what I think is really just commendable about the show is how there really is not a set framework, and yet somehow it works every time.
you know, that's very nice of you to say. I'm not sure every time, but it does tend to work, and you know, it doesn't have a strict format.
And we do have your voice as that guiding thread of coherence throughout the episodes. And, you know, you are the only one who's been there for the full 20 years. And now with 360 going off the air, what can we expect to see or hear or read next from Kurt Anderson?
Well, I am finishing a book. You know, the other thing I do and have done, you know, totally consistently for the last 25 years before I was doing the radio show and ever since is published books. You know, a bunch of novels and a couple of nonfiction books, and I'm finishing another nonfiction book. Literally within days, I hope, to turn it a manuscript, and that'll come out sometime later this year. So there's that. I don't have a title yet, or I would tell everyone what it is, but it's kind of a eccentric political economic history of America of the last 50 years, as opposed to my eccentric cultural history of America of the last 500 years called Fantasyland that I published a couple of years ago. Anyway, so that's what I'm working on. I'm doing some work with my new friend, the actor Jeff Goldblum, who's doing a television show for the Disney Plus channel, and I'm working with him on that. And, you know, I've always got various irons in the fire that, you know, until they're cooking or burning or whatever irons and fires do.
And I know you've lived in New York for quite some time now, but also we know your hometown is Omaha, Nebraska. So I would love to talk to you about how you feel your childhood affected your career.
So my Omaha childhood. What do you want to know? I was born in Dundee, then moved to 90th Street when I was 3 years old and lived there until my mom sold the house. You know, I do feel still like a Midwesterner and an Omahan and a Nebraskan. I really do. I think it made me observant. One of my experiences as a child that I think, in retrospect, I think, oh, this is formative and meaningful. Starting at, I don't know, very young, age maybe 10, but certainly 11 or 12, my mom would let me take the bus from Countryside Village, 87th Street and Pacific, downtown. She didn't know where I was going. I was just going downtown to hang out in this grittier, older part of the city that I just thought was cool and not like where I lived. And I would just walk around, and there was a stamp store. I'd go buy stamps for my stamp collection and go to these weird diners. And I did that a lot. I mean, it wasn't just once or twice. It was like many, many, many Saturdays. And so this, I don't know, I think of myself as this little kid in West Omaha, what was then West Omaha. Now I don't know even what that's called, Central Omaha. But I loved that urbanity. It kind of made some, in retrospect, it certainly makes sense that that was my, you know, stepping stone to moving to New York City.
That leads me into the last thing that I wanted to ask you about. I do want to ask you about your book, Fantasyland, the title Fantasyland, How America Went Haywire. And it's a historical account of how America got to this time of fake news and choose your own adventure versions of truth. But one thing that I was struck by is how you out yourself several times throughout the book, admitting that even you are not immune to some habits of cultural make-believe. And can you talk about those moments and why you felt it important to include them in the book?
Well, I mean, I guess, I had never written a big nonfiction book like this. I'd written a couple of little and very different nonfiction books, but this history, and given that it was and is, it's a history, but it's also a polemic. It's saying, we've gone to this bad place, how did we get here? What is it in the, you know, American history and character that led us to this place? And given that I was, you know, not Hector, I didn't want to be just like you bad people who think this way and aren't rational and aren't reasonable. I felt I'm not some kind of arm's length academic historian. I'm a person. I wanted to have a conversation, really, just like I do on radio, and have a conversation, you know, with the reader. You know, I feel it's good to kind of raise my hand and say, but I'm not guiltless here. You know, it's a conversational approach to writing. I remember, again, back to the radio show, when the radio professionals were interviewing me for this job, they would say, more than one of them, you know, radio is a very intimate medium. And I said, oh, yes, I know that, having never thought of that or heard of that or know what they're talking about. But it is, because it's, you know, the experience of it is this one person talking to you. And as I thought about it, and certainly as I started doing it, I realized that writing books, at least the books I write, is very much that. It is this conversation, like a mind meld between author and reader. And so that's why I do things like that. It's just like, I'm not, you know, a professor just telling you this happened in this date and this happened in this date, but rather this is how I conceive of this. And occasionally, when it seems appropriate, here's how it intersects with my personal life.
And now in this age of audiobooks, reading a book or listening to a book really is becoming more and more like radio experience or podcasting.
It does. And it was interesting doing the audiobook of Fantasyland, because happily, I mean, the actors do a brilliant job doing the audio versions of my novels. But this, I really wanted to do it, even though it's a big book, and it was hard to sit there for 5 days and read 160,000 words or whatever it is. But I thought it was really important especially in the same way that we're talking about, because it is me just talking, really. I mean, one writes differently than one talks, but I would have hated it if some actor or, you know, just hireling had read it, because I know exactly how each sentence to be read, you know, and how to emphasize things and what tone to have and whether this is meant to be humorous or not, you know. So yeah, it was interesting, because of course on a radio program you're not just reading. I mean, you have notes and things, but it's not like that. And usually there are other people in addition to me doing it. So it is connected. And that was another place, as I've discovered doing this radio show for 20 years. I mean, there's been lots of moments of kind of cross-fertilization where something I've written about like makes its way into the show, or something I do in the show makes its way into stuff I write. And that was doing the audiobook of Fantasyland was certainly a case of, oh, I know how to do this now in a way I wouldn't have known really how to do as well 15 years ago.
Sure, yeah. And it does make those moments, because it's your voice in the audiobook, those moments where you are admitting that you too partake in this fantasy world that you're talking about, it makes those moments more special, because it is your own voice that the reader is getting to listen to. It's quite special.
Yeah, well, good.
And I feel like that is part of it, that we know that it's you. You know, you're not saying that these opinions aren't coming from some highly academic source. You are just like anybody else. You were a kid in downtown Omaha, go into a stamp store, destined for New York City, playing out some fantasy.
Exactly.
Well, thank you so much for this conversation today. Thank you so much.
It was entirely my pleasure, and reinforces my feeling of fondness and gratitude toward the city that, you know, produced me.
Well, we'll miss 360 for sure, but we look forward to hearing from you in the future.
Excellent. You will.